Whose rights, which rights? Global contestations of women's and gender rights.
Edward Said once said, most important humanism is the only, and I would go so far as to say, the final resistance we have against the inhuman practices and injustices that disfigure human history. And with this quote, I welcome you to another podcast episode of Whose Rights, Which Rights? Global Contestations of Women and Gender Rights. With his work Orientalism in 1978, some would say Edward Said laid the foundation for today's post-colonialism and provided many linking points for academic and social debates. How important post-colonial perspectives are, we see not only when the news reports that statues of colonial rulers and slave traders are sunk in harbor basins as in Bristol last year, but we could also already notice in some discussions here in this podcast. That's why in today's episode, we will talk about post-colonial perspectives on women's and gender rights, especially in Brazil. And therefore, I welcome Professor Ligia Fabrice, Assistant Professor at Rio de Janeiro's Law School of Getúlio Vargas Foundation. Thanks for being here today with me. My name is Katharina Usling, and I'm really glad to host this podcast episode and to talk to you today. So let's start, as in every episode, with a short introduction by yourself. Ligia, your current research focuses on women in politics and democracy, gender-based political violence, and the rights of trans people and the intersection of law, gender studies, and political theory. So please tell us a bit about your research and especially in the CIF research group.
Thank you for having me, Katharina. I'm very pleased to be here with you today and to be part of this research group. So I, as a professor at Getúlio Vargas Foundation in Rio de Janeiro Law School, I teach and research mainly on gender and rights, and specifically on the topics you mentioned. And I also coordinate the diversity program of my university. So within this framework, I work a lot in the relations of women in politics and gender-based violence against women as a democratic issue, as a problem for democracy. And I see it as a topic that's not only important for Brazil or for Latin America, but also for most or every country in the world. So that's, for instance, a way to frame it not only as a southern problem, but to take it as a, so to speak, post-colonial issue, although it's not being so discussed in non-Latin American countries, for instance. And I also work with transgender rights in Brazil and Germany. And also in this research, I draw a comparison, a law comparison. And I could not say that German or Brazilian would be superior, so to speak, in their regulations of transgender rights within each other. But I would say Argentina was the country who issued the most advanced law recognizing gender identity and autonomy of transgender people. So I think it is not only a gender issue, but also has a point in terms of global inequalities and post-colonial perspectives.
Yeah, you already mentioned that you're working on post-colonial perspectives, and maybe to bring that a bit closer to our listeners, what does that mean for you in terms of the topic of the research group, which is global contestations of women's and gender rights?
Women's and gender rights are a matter of equality, or fighting the cross-cutting structural inequalities, power imbalance, the hierarchies between women and men, between heteronormativity and the deviations, so to speak, from it, and the hierarchy in terms of race, in terms of class. So from a postcolonial perspective, I think it is important to situate the knowledges and experiences, but also see the entanglements of inequalities between global North and South, and also how to learn from the South and understand that the global South can also speak to the world, to the North, and there are several possibilities to learn from it. So specifically, in my research on this research group, I would mention the questions about the gender-based political violence that is usually portrayed as something specific of the global South. And in my perspective, it is not. It is only that in several Latin American countries, there have been issued laws and created public policies to name it and fight it. And also the worldwide democratic deficit in regards to the underrepresentation of women in politics, and especially Black and Indigenous women. So actually, nowadays and very recently, Latin America has made huge progress in recent years. Unfortunately, I must say, not my home country, not Brazil, but I would say Brazil and some other European and North American countries could learn from that.
You said that gender-based political violence is often viewed as something specific of the global South, and you wouldn't agree with that. And I would say we saw that as well, that it's not true that it's a specific of the global South. So is there an issue that we see globally in different countries regarding gender-based political violence?
Yes, definitely. I think it speaks more or less, depending to the context, but I would say overall to all democracies in the world. And that is related to specifically gender hierarchy and the traditional idea of the division between a public realm, which should ideologically and so to speak within this ideology as natural related to men and to masculinity. And that would confine women to the private sphere, to the private space. So politics and the political realm, the institutional politics, is considered, it is regarded not only as a place located in this public sphere, but it's also a special sphere of power within this public sphere. It is the locus, it is the place where rules are negotiated and created that are going to be enforced in all society. So it is a special place of power. And as such, it is a place where women are not considered within the ideology of gender inequality. Women are not considered suitable for this place. And that's why we see so few women in general in parliament occupying positions of power and institutionalized politics. And that's a problem of the majority of the countries in the world and the majority of the democracies in the world. And I was saying that the world could learn, and especially the global North could learn from Latin America, with the exception, unfortunately, from Brazil, that is not advanced as the whole Latin American country nowadays. Because Latin America, like many Latin American countries, have made amazing advancements in this regard, achieving even equality, like where women would occupy at least 50% of the seats in parliament. So that's an important achievement for gender equality that has also consequences towards the whole society in terms of the laws that are going to be issued, and also in terms of a symbolic perspective. And that's also why women, and especially Black and trans women, are especially vulnerable to political violence, because it's also a way of saying to them that they do not belong, and that should be and would be the price you pay if they defy this idea.
So to speak a bit about Brazil, we all know that one of the biggest problems is Jair Bolsonaro and his government and his right-wing politic and all what goes together with that. But to focus on political violence against women, can you explain what this means and what the situation in Brazil is for women and gender rights from your perspective?
Yeah, this is a complex concept. Within this concept, many forms of violence are contained. So to speak about gender-based political violence is to speak about a violence which is perpetrated in terms of gender, which is to say in terms of addressing and using gender inequality as a purpose. And within the political realm, so that women and trans persons and even gay men, for instance, wouldn't be allowed to develop and to bring in the political realm their claims towards rights and their claims as a group, so as a gendered group. And that's the purpose, one of the purposes of gender-based political violence. It is to restrain, impede, to threaten political agents, Congress women, for instance, to constrain their possibilities of doing politics because of this marker, this gender marker, in order to prevent that the power imbalance and their claims as a group should be addressed and taken into consideration. And there are several ways of perpetrating gender-based political violence. It can be towards threats, or can be towards misogynist sayings or interrupting a congresswoman while she's talking, or not taking her seriously as a political agent, considering her incapable of negotiating and asking to speak with a male colleague of the party, and not giving women funds for making possible their political campaign. So there are many, many ways of gender-based political violence. The most extreme form of gender-based political violence is the extermination, which is the murder committed towards a woman who is in parliament. And that happened in Brazil very recently in 2018 with Marielle Franco, which then became a symbol against gender-based political violence, not only in Brazil, but worldwide. Marielle Franco was a lesbian or bisexual woman. There is a struggle on that as well, but an LGBT woman. And she was a Black woman, and she came originally from a favela in Rio de Janeiro, and she was murdered. Who ordered this murder is not yet clarified. And this is also an important political issue and question that should be made, and is being made in Brazil, and should also be made internationally. Who ordered the murder of Marielle Franco? This must be clarified.
To come back to a broader range of what you explained, gender-based political violence against women and the problems in democracy, and to link it to another episode with Shirin Super and Fatima Zadiki. In this episode, we talked about Western modernity and Western modernity as something from the Western white world, as a concept which is mainly oppressed and doesn't come from the society in Northern African or Arabic countries, which is one of the biggest issues. And would you say that this was or is an issue in Latin American countries as well?
I think it is. And some other scholars already said it before me, of course, that Western modernity is not only a problem for the global South, it is also a problem for the global North. So it is an ideology that if we take into consideration very closely, no country would comply with the ideal of Western modernity. And it's used to subordinate the non, so to speak, non-Western country. So I would begin this way, and then I would add that Brazil and other Latin American countries have some particularity toward this question, which is usually Latin American countries consider themselves part of Western modernity. And that's different from other regions and countries. And I think it should come also as some surprise within European countries and contexts, right? But because of its history and long colonization, which was made in the 16th century, Latin American countries already consider themselves deeply embedded in Western values and traditions in a way. And that's only to bring a little bit of complexity to the subject and say that although it's not considered by the classical traditional Western countries part of it, these countries usually look at themselves and consider themselves as part of it, or very struggling and willing to be a great part of it. So European laws have been in force in Latin America for many centuries. And especially, I would say, in some Latin American countries such as Bolivia and Ecuador, there is a huge contestation in regards, for instance, to indigenous culture and laws and regulations and the role indigenous tradition and play and should play in the state and in the rules and in the constitution even. Brazil is not such a case, but that's because the indigenous population in Brazil has been massacred along the centuries. First for Europeans and then for the ones who stayed and remained, the task that's still being conducted of oppressing the native original populations.
It is, of course, also clear that decolonization is something we have to deal with globally. What is your perspective on potentials and alliances of solidarity and, yeah, maybe to end with not just the problems in this episode?
Yes, thank you for bringing the hope in this conversation. I think solidarities and alliances are the key, and solidarities and alliances within social groups and movements in the country, and in this context I'm speaking of Latin American countries, but also international and solidarities from other countries of the world. And that's perhaps a difficult task that would make things that have at least the potential to make a counterpoint to this right-wing populist movements worldwide. Because we, in this research group, we researched the differences and the specific context, the situated positioning and specificities of specific countries and regions. But we also looked at patterns of contestations worldwide. And that's a very important task, I guess. And therefore, it's also a very important task to draw the solidarity worldwide to be able to counteract this right-wing populist governments and movements.
Yeah, so thank you as well that there is hope. And I think that was one of the biggest things I dealt with in this podcast, but all of you said, yeah, there is hope, especially because of the solidarity, and we see this in this research group. So I would say thank you very much for today and for discussing with me. If you listeners are interested in the work of Ligia or the research group itself, you can find the link to the website of the TIF under each episode in our show notes. And this was today's episode of Whose Rights, Which Rights? Global Contestations of Women's and Gender Rights. I say thank you to Professor Ligia Fabrice. I discussed with today about post-colonial perspective on women's and gender rights and gender-based political violence. My name is Katharina Usling, and I say thank you for listening and goodbye until the next episode.